you've ever actually paid your own money. Hey, wonderful. Thanks very much to read the Scientific Journal. Okay, so off we go. Open Knowledge Foundation. And I'm going to introduce something called Is It Open? Right, which the Open Knowledge Foundation has come up with. So I'm going to actually, first of all, say some thanks because I always forget, but particularly Rufus Pollock. Where's Rufus? It's not here, right, that's not much. I came to his talk. Right, so here's a scientific graph. How many people know what that graph is? Right, well, you should, because that's what it is. And that data has been collected by Keeling over many years. It's called the Keeling curve. And it happens that that data, I can show this without breaking copyright. How many people know what that data is called? What's it called? The hockey stick. It's the rise in temperature. It's hotly debated. And you go off to, here's the paper in which it occurred. And you can read this. And I will magnify up the copyright, and you'll see how friendly it is. This book is subject to this. You may do absolutely bugger all without us sending the lawyers. It's as simple as that. That is, it happens to be Cambridge University Press, but it could be Elsevier, it could be anywhere, right? And do they do it? Well, yes, the hell they do. Here is Wiley, a young graduate student, Shelley Batts, read a paper. She didn't agree with it. She said, this paper is crap. It was crap. So she said, on my blog, here's the graph, and I challenged this graph. She put the graph up. She got a lawyer's letter from Wiley. Just read it. Look at this. If these figures are not removed, lawyers from John Wiley and Sons will contact you and throw you in jail. I mean, that is holding back science. The climate depends on this. We can't do it. You know, the whole of our medical understanding, biological understanding, and so on, is all published in the scientific literature through public funding, and it is constrained by the publisher. So I can give you many, many more examples of that. But what I want to do is to talk about... Rufus has arrived now. So what we did about a month ago is we went to a pub in Cambridge called the Panton, and this was Cameron Nayland, Rufus, and I sat down at lunch. And we came up with what we called, this is from Cameron's blog, what we called the Panton Principles, right? It's quite a nice pub. And so you go through this, and I will give you the principles, right? So the Panton Principles is the best practice in data publishing is to do something, not licenses. We're clear that the more licenses you put on, the harder it becomes. Even a little license, even one saying, well, you can do almost everything, but you can't do this, absolutely screws you down. You've got to be in a situation where you can do whatever you like without having to ask anybody's permission, because that bit of fear, uncertainty, and doubt just stops you doing. Just it stops you dead. So... here we are. The purpose of publishing scientific data is to enable reuse and repurposing of data. That's why scientists do it. They don't want to make money out of it. They don't want to, build some commercial empire. They want to say, this is the data. I need recognition for it. I've created the data, but this data is for other people to use, and they might use it better than me, and they will mash it up in various ways, and I'll show you that when we come to the end of this. So non-commercial terms prevent it. Do not use non-commercial licenses. It actually makes the situation worse. Right. Share left and copyright have the same potential to do problems, right? The scientific community is governed by strong community norms. That's our power. If you step outside the bounds of established practice, the community will do things which are more effective than, lawyers' copyrights. They'll say, well, no more funding, or we won't publish your stuff. When you send it off for publish or whatever, we can't rely on this person to behave responsibly. Now, obviously, there can be problems there, but basically the community says, this is how we treat data. We expect it to be open. We expect people to reuse it. If they reuse it, they must do it responsibly. They must say where it came from. They must say what programs they used to manipulate it, and so forth and so on. So explicit statements are required, but not licenses. And Jordan's going to talk all about that, so I'm not talking about the details. So... this is where we got to. best practice is to enable that, to place it explicitly in the public domain. And that's not a trivial legal concept, as we'll hear, but from our scientists' point of view, we trust Jordan and Rufus and the others to get it right. I mean, I've deferred that decision. We argue a lot, but as far as I'm concerned, I tell my scientists, friends, the problem is solved. You just put on it the Open Knowledge Foundation open data statement, and that's all you need to do. Right. So what we've done, the problem is that 99.999% of scientific data does not have that stamp. So what we put together is a tool here, and this is Rufus and Jenny and various others, and I've probably forgotten some of them, but we saw the My Society site. Is anyone here connected with My Society? Right, well, have you seen Write to Them? What do they know? Right, okay. So the point is, I've used Write to Them. I wrote to my MP when the MP didn't reply, and I wrote again, and I put it on my blog and so on. It works, you know. They don't like it, you know. You're actually seen publicly to be chasing him. So what this is based on that, and it's now going live. And so this is the home page. Now, this is without the style sheet, so it doesn't look very nice here, right? Rufus has got some nice style sheets. Let me see if I can make it a bit smaller. No, okay. But I did take a screen copy somewhere or other, I think. Yeah, so that's a screen copy of it. And the question is it open data? Is the data that I want open? Now, we're taking the view that almost all scientists, if you ask them, is your data open? Well, they'll say, yes. You know, we hadn't sort of thought about it, but yes, we want anybody to use it. And do you want a publisher to own it and control it? No, the hell, we don't want them to do that. So if we can get to a stage where before they actually publish the data, they stamp it as, this is open data. It belongs to the world, not to Elsevier, not to Nature, not to Wiley and all the others. Then we can start reusing this data. So the idea is, just like whatdothenow.org, you ask a question, and let me see, Rufus has got some other pictures of this, I think. Oh, that tells you about it, and I think this is an example from, I did have one, so this will not look very nice, but I think this is one that Jenny put together. This is an inquiry. Unresolved, started on a particular date. I am, you know, and the idea is that people will say who they are, why they're interested in it, and I'm writing on behalf of this, we're seeking clarification of the openness of the scientific data associated with your publication. So the idea is that if we can get a sufficient community together who asks, I think in the first case, the publishers who are going to be on our side, because there are a lot of publishers who are on our side, and they're mainly the open access ones, but not all of them. I mean, publishers like Nature do in fact understand this and are sympathetic. So we want to get to the stage where, you see, we weren't able to find an explicit statement of the fact, so we're writing to find out what the situation is. Of course, we don't have the same legal requirements as Freedom of Information does for them to reply. I mean, the most likely thing is that they won't reply, you know, particularly if they're antagonistic to making their data open. The problem, you see, is that many publishers are also data publishers. So they aggregate what they publish and then they sell it back again. So if you take the American Chemical Society, it collects all the chemical information published in the world and has a business which is probably worth about $400 million a year in selling back information which was originally in, you know, in the public domain. Now, they did that in the last century by sweat of the brow, that's fine. But in this century, we can do it automatically just using robots. And I'm not going to I'm not going to give it many examples of that. I will try and just give you one, which is one here. Is this a... right, so this is one where we have scraped hundreds and millions of pages of chemistry here. And if we go into it, I think I'll go to the top one here. Every night this goes out and, oh, it's gone needs the net, sorry. But it scrapes this and creates a database of literally 100,000 compounds. I was hoping that we would get a little picture here of a molecule so you could see what it's like. But all of that data, we've got 100,000 of those scraped every night. So the technology isn't the problem. Once you get this, you can do exciting things. And to catch up, I'm going to start to wind down. But I thought I would just leave you with something to set the scene of it for the OpenStreetMap. And this is something that happened last week. I was in the coffee lounge, and my colleagues came in, and we started talking. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, we've got an e-science program on sensing pollution in Cambridge. So I said, that sounds interesting. He said, look at my website. So here we are. The website looks like this, Cambridge Mobile Sensing. But here are two pictures, right? So this is Cambridge from the air, and Cambridge from the air as well. And this is the carbon monoxide. And what you've got here is you've got a trace of the pollution overlaid on the geographical data. And same for the nitrogen monoxide. Both these things are produced by buses and cars and things of that sort. And so what they've got is they've got pedestrians and cyclists to walk round or cycle round and monitor this in real time. So I'm going to leave you, I think, with the movie here, which is really rather fun if it works. Is it going to just work? Maybe I have to go. I think it worked under Firefox. Why does it always say save when you want it to run? Stupid system. I only do this because Microsoft pay me. They do. Well, they don't pay me. I don't get anything out of it. You have to take it on trust that you have here a real-time analysis of the pollution, which is basically done by crowdsourcing. And this was picked. I blogged this. I said, wouldn't this be a good idea? Can we mash this up onto OpenStreetMap in real time? And the next day it was picked up by The Guardian, by Charles Arthur in The Guardian. And here you are. And it's talking about this and so forth and so on. So the point is that we have got now the opportunity. This data is infinitely cheap. We've got to own it rather than the vested interests. So I'm really just going to leave you with the fact that we have to assert our data is open and that the Open Knowledge Foundation is putting in place tools which allow us to determine whether it's open and legal instruments to make sure that we can label it as open.
Thanks very much, Peter. If there are any particular questions, very specifically kind of to pick up anything there, do fire them in now. Otherwise, we'll move on to Jordan and have more general discussion after Jordan's spoken and after Steve Coast has spoken, if we see him anyway.
But there's a long tradition in science of review papers quoting other people's data and slagging it off quite often.
Yes. Well, one of my colleagues wrote a review, and there were some diagrams he wanted to review, and the Elsevier said, well, yes, you can have permission, and it'll cost you £100 for each diagram. Right. So, I mean, it is holding us back. I'm angry. I want other people to get angry about it.
So I was wondering what you think the mechanisms are for...
Detect this place.
Do you think it's up to the funders?
Yes.
Whether they want to become a bill going through the US Congress, but I think it's going to be proposed, isn't it, which would mandate open combination of public funded scientific research in the US. And I know the institute where I work was funded by the Wellcome Trust, and they insist that all our grant research publicly is made access to all our software is producing capital open source licenses, for example. So there are some funders that are doing it already.
No question, and the two who've really led the charge, are Wellcome Trust, who've done a brilliant job, and the National Institute of Health. National Institute of Health have had to fight the US Congress tooth and nail because all of the big publishers, ACS, Elsevier, have highly paid lobbyists who go in and they rubbish open access. They say it's junk science, which it is not. They say it'll lead to the demise of the publishing industry, which it will because they're so bloody awful. It will, right, it will mean that a new publishing industry, you know, based on 21st century things will arise. So Wellcome have done a fantastic job, not only in insisting this themselves, but also in setting the standard for other people to follow.
Now we can move on to the man who's fixed the licensing protocol legal problem.
John. I hope so. As Peter mentioned, I'm an IPIT lawyer, and I pretty much focus on anything involving the word open in it, whether it's open rights or open innovation, or in this case, open data. And in 2007, I helped start a group called Open Data Commons. And the whole point of this organization is to start working on legal tools to help facilitate open data. It was sort of started with Talis, the library information sciences company. They had seen that open data and the rights around it were going to be a big issue, and so they decided to put some funding into it and funded me and an academic from the University of Edinburgh to start drafting some licenses. Now we're a project of the Open Knowledge Foundation, and you can check out our site at opendatacommons.org. So what do I mean by open data, especially in the context of licensing? It's simply the application of many of the things that you're probably already well familiar with in open source and open content with like Creative Commons, those legal tools, applying those to data. And kind of some background on that, you know, GPL, the Free Software Foundation's work, OSI, it's all focused on software. Creative Commons is focused around content. Data is different from both software and content, legally and in sort of the things that you do with it, which makes those licenses inappropriate. As Rufus mentioned in his talk about the open knowledge definition, when I talk about open, this is what I mean, free to use, reuse, and redistribute with perhaps the only restrictions being attribution or share alike or copyleft. The commercial restriction would not, a non-commercial restriction would not fall under the open knowledge definition. And I'm happy to talk a bit more about that if you like. So why start a licensing project? As I kind of mentioned, and as Rufus mentioned also in his talk, there are no good open data licenses out there at the time. And Talis in particular had been working a lot in the semantic web space. And they knew that IP issues would come up with data and databases, but Peter's talked about some of the ones that come up. And data and databases are increasingly important, so there needed to be some sort of solution available. And if you kind of put it into context, right? Software has Richard Stallman sort of agitating for free software. Content has Creative Commons and Larry Lessig, even though he's kind of moved on. There hasn't been anybody that's sort of agitating about data specifically, at least not in an open way on the legal end of things. And so you kind of think about it in terms of technology adoption curve, just to kind of show where we're at with open data, even in the legal tools, in that Linux is probably more towards the late majority end. CC tools are starting to get adopted more and more. Open data is really in the innovators and early adopters phase of both developing licensing and legal infrastructure around it, as well as just people thinking about the issues. So why is it important? So probably for you guys, I don't really need to say much about it, but semantic web type applications, a lot of them depend on data. Access to knowledge, a lot of open government depends on data as well. And just finally, collecting data is hard work. So this is a module from Skylab. And it costs a lot to collect data, and it's sort of really important that it's out there and being shared. So the legal side is important, mostly because IP, so broadly patents, database rights, copyright, trademark, technical protection measures, other forms of law do apply to databases. So they're not, a lot of people think, oh, well, data, they mean factual data, and they think, oh, well, that stuff's free, right? It's not covered by any kind of law. And the simple answer is that it is. I can go into more detail about the specifics of the law, if you like, maybe in questions. But because these rights do apply, this means your use of a database will depend on permission, and that permission takes the form of a license. So to date, we've got three legal tools out there. The first one is the public domain dedication and license. The second one, which was just released this week, is the open database license, which is a copyleft or share alike database license. And the database contents license goes along with the open database license to license the contents, which I'll discuss more in a minute. The PDDL, again, I can go into more detail in questions if you like. It pretty much does what it says on the tin, right? It takes a database and it dedicates it to the public domain. It's also a license because it turns out that, legally speaking, dedicating work to the public domain, giving up your copyright in a database is actually a hard thing to do. It's not clear. There's not like a statute in the Copyright Designs Patents Act. You can't just look up section 67 and it says put this on there and then you waive all your rights. So the open database license, as I mentioned, is essentially copyleft or share alike and databases. And we launched it last week, and it solved some of the shortcomings with the use of Creative Commons licenses. So people are using CC licenses for databases right now, mostly because there hasn't been another solution out there. They're a poor fit. If Steve was here, he would tell you, if you look around like the OpenStreetMap, Legal Talk list, they've had a lot of problems with using a CC license for their database, a lot of practical issues, because it's not meant to cover databases. And as I said, you do different things with data than you do with content. And the ODBL is really the only share-alike license available that's been specifically crafted by lawyers for databases. Some of the legal stuff. So the license itself makes a distinction between the contents of the database, and which we commonly refer to as the data, and the database itself, in part because legal rights would be different. So if you had the example I like to use is if you had a database of Flickr photos, you couldn't license the Flickr photos. Like you say you pulled down a bunch of photos that were CC licensed off Flickr. Those aren't yours to turn around and re-license if you made a database of them. But you do have rights over the database that you created. And so this kind of separates that out and allows situations like that to happen. If you're just using predominantly factual data, we've come up with this license, the database contents license, that essentially is like a public domain dedication and says, look, it's factual data. I'm not really claiming to own a fact. It's copyright law, the way it's set up. Factual information by itself is generally not copyrightable. But it says, look, there may be some stuff inside the contents that has copyright, and I'm licensing it to you. The ODBL itself works through a combination of copyright as well as contract, and here in Europe we have specific rights around databases and data called database rights. If you compare what we're doing with the ODBL to how Creative Commons works or the FSF with the GPL, we're doing one text that has worldwide application and will be translated. We're not doing ports to specific countries like Creative Commons does. So the big thing is, the big use case for the ODBL is that it's up for adoption. The community, I believe, is gonna at least start the process or possibly vote at the OpenStreetMap conference, State of the Map, this time next week in Amsterdam. As I said, they currently use CC by SA and they're going to migrate to the ODBL. And If any of you are from Open Street Map, thank you very much for the support and the feedback. And I'll be speaking more about the license next week. As far as the project and Open Knowledge Foundation, if you're interested in helping, we're looking for volunteers to help sort of bridge the gap between all the licensing stuff that we discuss on Open Data Commons discuss list and the stuff that we do on our site with your particular community that is somehow involved in data or databases. It could be, you could be in a particular scientific community, but if you want to act as a community contact, we would help you understand the licenses better, and as well as sort of put you as a official source on the site for people to go to. You can support the Open Knowledge Foundation. We're in the middle of a supporter drive at the moment. You can just join the discuss list or just give us any feedback on how we can help or what we should be doing. So, and thanks.
So I think we've still lost Steve Coast of OpenStreetMap. So unless there's anybody here who wants to step in from OpenStreetMap, Jordan, maybe I'll pick up as he's already indicated some any questions around that and their use of data. We have around 15 minutes now for questions, comments, discussion.
Well, maybe a dark question. Can you just elaborate a little bit more about the difficulties of going straight that thing, CC2.5 in that region? Why that difficulty of applying that to Facebook and, for example, my society on the bottom of their page say,
there's problems with the legal structure of the licenses themselves when you start talking about databases. So first, Creative Commons, you know, has sort of the six basic licenses that they use. They're not all open under the open definition because some of them are non-commercial restrictions. And they take these six licenses and they have an unported, currently they have an unported version, which is supposed to be a somewhat generic or raw license. And then they have country-specific ports. And the country-specific ports treat databases differently. So if you look at some of the European ports, so like the Belgian and the Dutch licenses, they waive the database, right? So you wouldn't necessarily have that layer of protection. The UK licenses say nothing about the database, right? So it's not actually licensed. So that's one sort of technical problem.
If I understand you, it's more to do with the implementation of those licenses. Is that much to do with the implementation of those licenses? As much to do with the fact that there's necessarily
So you're asking a really good question, which is, what is it? Like, any license can be extended. Like, one of the things we first did was add a patch to the CC license that would extend it, right? But so you're asking one of the question, CC licenses don't license knowledge rights, called data rights. So when you have license rights, what's the default?
You have to ask for permission.
So you have to ask for permission. So the fundamental problem is that CC licenses don't deal with those data rights. Both in Europe and, let's say, Australia, and other countries. The other sort of question that comes up in relation to databases and comes up in OpenStreetMap a lot is the question of what they call produced work. So let's say if I take a street map and I make a picture, a map, what we normally think of a map, but it's not the same as a data, right? It's a database. What's the deal there? What am I seeking to license? Am I, do I want to impose things on people who make maps out of my database, or do I just want people who make new databases out of my database? I don't know if code's here, it's like if you have a program that produces some output, do you want your GPL to be affecting the output of that program or just the program itself? Now, normally you just want the program itself. You don't want people who use, I don't know, Emacs, and have all of their content automatically in GPL, right? And that's a problem as well, is that people, a lot of us find this stream map, they want people to make maps freely to be able to combine them with other stuff. But they want to have a share-alike license for their data. They don't want people to be taking the data and doing it, closing it. So they're happy to do that with the maps that they're available. So they can find out the data.
Necessarily, by then, sort of, like, the
absolutely. Like when you render a graph from a database, that's not necessarily, you could have a license to do that. It's kind of, I don't know, like the GPL versus the LGPL, you know, there's, you know, you get the same things. But the fundamental scope of the license, do not license the right in data or database. They just don't decide to do that. That's good. They talk about public performance. It's different to public perform data. Whereas you can public perform data.
Anyone else? No more questions?
I work with Steve Cook, actually, as a very active engineer in the company. In fact, I've kind of deliberately avoided them getting into arguments with people about the legality of the company. I wondered how much exposure Jordan has had to the discussions that circle around endlessly.
So in developing the open database license, I early on decided that I wasn't going to actively participate in legal talk because it would suck up a lot of time, as well as kind of, I don't know, tinge my neutrality on the subject, because I wanted to get a feel for what the community wanted and not be in there trying to agitate. But as a practical matter, I mean, I read legal talk, the OpenStreetMaps legal discussion list. I've been in contact and worked quite closely with their pro bono legal counsel from Wilson Sonsini in California on developing the license, and gone through several back and forths. Not to mention that we've had several public comment periods for the open database license where lots of people from OpenStreetMap and other communities have sort of read through the text and given feedback on it. Right, so the goal is to make it applicable worldwide. And so you take as much as possible the general principles of law that apply throughout the planet, and then write a license based on that. So the there's kind of like a technical legal point that I can make that is around the GPL versus Creative Commons. So Creative Commons licenses go through this porting process where they have specific country jurisdictions, as well as they have this unported license. The unported license is actually really, really bad in terms of how it would fit to one country's law, because it's written around Bern, the Bern Convention, which I could go into more detail, but the answer is it doesn't fit one country's law, even if a lot of people still use it. The GPL is not written to fit necessarily one country's law. It's more like Eben Moglen calls the GPL, you know, the constitution of the free software movement, and you can get a lot of enforcement both in the courts and through community enforcement by writing one document that sort of covers everything and covers the legal rights in a way that generally fit with almost every jurisdiction. I'm a US-based lawyer. I've also had extensive practice experience here in the UK. I've been here for 4 years, been involved in the law for 4 years. We've gone through a lot of the comment period through with lots of lawyers and legal minds from jurisdictions throughout the world.
So where are you with this now? Do you have to look at the situation of the commons, I mean, legendary ports, or you?
We're not doing porting. So I said that during my talk, and let me reemphasize it. Right. We will not be doing porting of the license. So we have got one document that will be translated into other languages, but we're not going to have like an Open Data Commons Germany that creates a new license based around this license specifically for German law.
I was wondering as well, just thinking, how likely is it your license would be active? As Peter described, you've got somebody who wants to make their data public, and they apply your license, which is really to give comfort to the end user that they're not doing anything illegal. Kind of who's got a problem with that, I guess, to actually try and take legal action?
Open source and free software licenses, you know, you can get court action to enforce the terms of the license itself.
Yeah.
So when somebody has not shared alike,
if you had no non-commercial and you didn't have the share alike, which is an option, isn't it?
Well, the share alike is built into the ODBL.
So that's the only time you take action, is if somebody didn't share a like?
Well, there's some slight attribution requirements within the ODBL. The answer, a lot of people with open source and free software licenses make a big deal out of, well, have they been tested in court? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, if you do your job and write a good license in the first place, that it doesn't go to court, right? So if you're a transactions attorney and you're papering over deals, your whole goal, like being a good attorney, is to keep it out of court. Like, it should never have to go to court to be tested. It should, the parties that use it, if they agree to it and understand it, and you get enforcement by people pointing people to the license and saying, look, section 4.6b says this, you're doing that, that's wrong, and then they fix it, then that's all you need.
And the public purpose goes, I think, as Rufus described earlier, as Pete described, is that the person taking that data should not have any of these doubts that they're going to get lawyers.
Absolutely right. And I think one of the things here is that what we find is that in large areas of practice, and that certainly relates to science, and I think it relates increasingly, you know, to the practice in the public domain, is people take these as the normal approach to practice. They don't want to benefit, they want to make it easy for people. So the phrase community norms is a very powerful one. And that means that, you know, we try and work out what the majority of people feel is the right thing, way to do, and we try and get that much higher than the license. I mean, both Cameron and myself were quite clear. We didn't want to know about the licenses. We wanted perhaps the license to be as visible as a gearbox or something like that. It was there if really needed, but licenses frighten scientists, you know, and I think they do in many other areas as well. People don't want to feel there are tricky things they have to read because it might go wrong and so forth. They actually want something that says, you don't have to worry about it, and that I think is the purpose.
So you have two states, clean and contaminated.
Yeah.
And if it's clean, you don't care what it is that makes it clean, as long as you know it's clean. Mm.
Yeah. You mentioned about public domain and how it's difficult, I've read a bit about this, that it's actually difficult to get something into the public domain, particularly in certain jurisdictions where, you know, how do you dedicate it? But if there's just one country in the world where it's easy to put something in the public domain, and you put it in the public domain in that country, because everything's connected, doesn't that effectively make it public domain everywhere? And certainly if it was hosted there, I don't really know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. That's a good question, George.
So even though there are several international treaties around, just take copyright as an example for public domain, because when we say public domain, it actually means several different things. But if you look at copyright in particular, it, like almost all IP rights, have some harmonization, but it's a national right. So it's, I have a copyright in this presentation that is in the United States. I may have a copyright that I can go enforce in Germany. You know, it depends on what the actual nation's law says for that specific jurisdiction.
So putting it in the public domain in the UK doesn't necessarily mean it's in the public domain in the US.
So stuff has different terms, right? So if I have a copyright in India, it's life of the author plus 50 years, I believe. If it's here in the UK, it's life of the author plus 70 years. So there's a 20-year gap to where something may be in the public domain in another country and not here, right? And there are other IP, there are other types of copyright that would be covered in one country and not in another.
But if you have copyright in India that's different from the one here, and I wanted to use the work that is in a way that's permitted in India but not permitted here, if I got a hosting account on a server in India, logged into there, and then did something with your work then and hosted it in India, even though I was doing it from here, then the thing according to the Indian thing, then it would be there, I wouldn't have a problem.
So this is getting into like internet law and like how the law gets enforced over the internet. And the short answer is that everybody has some rules around jurisdiction. And just because you're trying to do everything offshore, if you're located onshore and you're sort of manipulating all that, that doesn't like magically get you out of liability.
The controlling mind is within
right.
this jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? Otherwise,
I'm just going to have a general one. Are there any companies that are commercial basis. In terms of, obviously, the publishers, you know, I know there are a few open new companies doing, you know, open science. But are there any commercial companies doing new
So I think that, and I'm speaking here for scholarly publishing in science, the publishers who've taken an open access model will generally, I think, espouse all of the principles that we've heard here. And it's really a question of making the instruments available for them to express their current motivation. So you go to something like Biomed Central, which is probably the largest open access scientific publisher, and you know they use Creative Commons BY, which is the best thing at that stage for that. And the intention is, and they state it, that they adopt the BBB, Bethesda Berlin, Budapest declarations, which say that all of this stuff is available for any purpose by anyone at any time on the internet or anywhere else for doing whatever you like with. And that I've paraphrased, but it's basically saying that. And that obviously algorithmically covers data as well as text and so forth. On the other hand, you've got the major commercial publishers who are fighting tooth and nail to hold everything back within their jurisdiction and grasp and so on. And so I think there's going to be a fracture in that part of the community. As you move away from pure science to areas where there are clearer business models in the transfer of knowledge, then I think you get grayer areas. But I can... certainly companies like Talis, you know, have sponsored the open data, and I'd like to thank them for doing that. So they're aware of the commercial value of stamping something as open data.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, thanks very much for coming to the session. Thanks to our speakers again, Peter and Jordan.